There were four levels of development of all media. And of all human artifacts, hardware or software, this is, whether it's radio or romanticism or rap, the same four apply, without one exception. Make this categorical assertion. First, all of them amplify, enlarge, enhance something already present. The car, the plane, amplifies speed, obviously. Xerox amplifies copying. Email, speed, one-on-one correspondence, and so on. I have a book about this, Laws of Media. I have another one called The Electric Language, so I'm not going to give you a whole pile of examples. You can find them easy enough. I'll just run through the four laws. Second law, or another law, is that of reversal. Recently, Malcolm Gladwell brought out a little book called The Tipping Point. It's a sort of footnote to this law. Xerox turns every man into a publisher. That's a reversal. Start out making a few copies, and the flip is, you become a publisher. The airplane turns every city into the suburb of every other. The motor car destroys the inner city, the central city, and creates a suburb. All that stuff. And things like bedroom communities, among many other things. The reversal with the car is the traffic jam. It enhances speed, but push it far enough and you get a jam. No speed. No motion. Of course, the themes of tape today are all reversals. Hardware to software, central to decentral, jobs to role, and so on. Obsolescence you might think of as the high part. I promised to give you a couple of examples. The Hydra is that mythical monster that Hercules had to overcome. It lived in the swamp of Lerna. It was very hard to subdue because if you chopped off the head of the Hydra, two or three grew in its place, just like that. So you wipe them off and you get six or eight more. Losing proposition. But this is precisely how obsolescence works. One of the signs of obsolescence is suddenly there's a proliferation. There's more of the stuff around there. It's a sign that it's on its way out. And that's the Hydra. Cut off the head and you got a lot more. It's happened to us with literacy. Literacy is dead, so what do we have? Literacies. Schedule. I'll be talking a lot about this next week. But there's the hybrid operation. What else? The alphabet obsolesced the bards and their power of mimesis. The car obsolesced the horse and buggy. Email obsolesces the post office. It obsolesces formality. A lot of things. Another law, a fourth law, is that of retrieval. And that's part of the cliche archetype process. It's a dynamic interchange between obsolescence and retrieval to feed each other. TV brings back the movie as art. Before the television came along, movies were junk. They're crap. You know, Three Stooges, come on, this isn't high culture. Now we say sure is. Speech set aside thought, or brought back thought. Rock and roll brings back the amateur musician. And the internet retrieves the oral encyclopedia. Before set in from the very first moment of whatever the technology is. They're all simultaneously present in the thing. They don't all show themselves at once. Sometimes one or another will take years to appear, but it's there, in embryo. The inner orchestration of these four, as I said, is analogical ratios. A is to B, as C is to B. And those four characterize every word in every language. There's a chapter in Understanding Media on this thing called Media as Translators. New media, this was from about 1959. New media are new languages. Their grammars as yet unknown. This could well be the basis of our study of literacies. I can't resist. I'll give you one or two really pedestrian tetrads. Murphy's Law. You know Murphy's Law. If anything can go wrong, it will. I could just as easily do radio or telephone. Those are rather banal. Let's pick something exotic. Murphy's Law enhances perversity in grievance and like. It obsolesces rational explanations for things and obsolesces precaution. Because if anything can, it brings back the irrational and inevitability. And if you push it far enough, it turns into health, wit, and humor. Another one I'd like to burden you with. Parking stickers. You know, those little pieces of paper. You have to pay up a lot of money to allow you to park in front of your own house. Parking stickers enhance control over who parks where. They set aside chaos, which otherwise would prevail. They retrieve order, the orderly neighborhood, and reversal. Parking sticker is actually a protection racket. You know the protection racket? The guy comes in with a baseball bat and says, "Nice store you have here. Too bad if anything happened to you. Nice car you've got. Too bad if something towed away. Gee, you know, just buy this little sticker. I guarantee we'll take care of you." Okay, how about cyberspace? Don't try it on cyberspace. It enlarges, enhances instant speed and spaceship Earth. Push to a reversal, the world becomes a theme park, place of chaos. Retrieves inner space, ancient percepts, the mystical, fluidity. When you're on the phone, where are you? Oh, your body's here, but where are you? In cyberspace. Obsolescence 3D space and time. Obsolescence becoming travel, the body, nature, the natural, the rational, fixity. It is space without measure, space without expanse. The world of electric media is entirely metaphysical. Well, the effects of electric media and the PC. In the 19th century, we introduced a new literacy. Silent reading started after the telegraph. Well, okay, around the turn of the 19th century, a few people would read silently. Prior to the 18th century, that number would have been most people. And prior to the Renaissance, that would have been through the Renaissance, everybody read a lot, all the time. That's the only way there was to read. But with the telegraph, it drove the voice inward and enhanced inner experience. We had another literacy in the 60s called speed reading. Whole new phase of print and of words and of language in the alphabet. And that was part of the demise. In the 20th century, in the 19th century, watch what happened with reading silently. This was actually speed reading. Reading aloud, you can go about 100, maybe 200 words a minute, about the rate of speech. 200 words a minute is pretty fast. 180 words a minute is 3 words a second, and that's pretty good play. But silent reading, you can double or triple that. When I started teaching speed reading in the 60s, I routinely got people coming in the door who were good readers. They didn't come because they weren't good readers. They wanted to try this new experience. And the good readers, we were right on the edge of the campus, U of T campus, And there are a lot of good readers there. Good readers included housewives and doctors and plumbers and academics, you name it. A good reader would read somewhere around 400 to 500 words a minute. Reasonably light stuff. Today, a good reader reads somewhere around 300 words on average, and that average is getting lower. I'll talk about that too in a moment. But silent reading meant speed reading. And it meant a few other things. Suddenly, you discover there's a movie going on in your head. And if you try reading aloud, you'll see that movie isn't there. It doesn't happen when you're reading silent aloud. Only when you're reading silently and at speed. One of the things I find with students now who are having trouble reading, they don't have that movie. Imagine reading a book, a novel, without that thing going on. All that you have is the words on the page. It's a pretty impoverished experience. And that's the condition of most of our readers right now. But there were some further developments now in the 20th century. I started when I was teaching at the our Institute of Quantitative Communications. Started to track things like sentence length and sentence structure. And I found some interesting things. The 20th century has seen a rapid decline in length of sentence. Sentence length, I figured, is a correlative to attention span. And writers tailor their sentences to the attention spans of their audience. In some measure, this is done by the audience, and as they buy a book, they find it stretches them a little, so they don't finish it, they buy a different work. There's a kind of natural selection or adaptation. Nevertheless, some of the cannier writers are more in tune with their reader's sensibilities, and they write using the reader's sensibilities as their own. They put them on. There's a change in the structure of attention. The shorter attention span is reflected in average sentence length and in paragraph structure. Early 20th century, average sentence ran about 25 words. Check this out yourself, please. I'm using only popular writing. Things that the popular, or the populace, buys. So I'm trying to get a reading of what the average person is doing. Not the average scientist, or average technician, or average literature. Early 20th, about 25. By mid-20th, sentence length is down closer to 20 words per sentence. In the 1980s, it hits 14 to 15 words a sentence. In the 90s, it's down 10, 12 words a sentence. And the Harlequins now are down at around 6 or 8 words a sentence, average. Now, this has no relation to intelligence. It's strictly related to perception and sensibility. Sentence length, attention span. I never would put down the Harleys or any of that genre because they're very carefully crafted to provide a very specific range of effects, and they do their jobs quite well. All right, paragraphs. Mid-20th century, well, I was in school then, and they taught me a paragraph is a group of sentences, usually 7 to 10, that express a single thought or develop a single idea. A paragraph has a topic sentence and then others develop it. It has transitions in and out, top and bottom, and so on. I suggest to you, it's been a long time since you saw one of those. Certainly not the world of word processing. By the way, that term, word processing, is worth prolonged meditation. It isn't writing. It's another thing. It's the word as process. Anyway, we'll come back to that. Right now, talking about the personal computer, and I saw the changes to language that occurred because as the personal computer entered the office, I was teaching the people who were going through the transition, and they told them. Paragraphs went through a whole lot of changes. And as a result of the PC, we now have three styles of paragraph. New styles. 7 to 10 sentences, Look on your PC. When's the last time you saw a paragraph like that in email? People don't write that way on the PC. Literary people do, and they're stuck. They're hidebound. They've got the same habits they can't get let loose of. But you come upon people who don't have any inhibitions and see what they do with a little training. And how much of that training takes something and stuff. And when they get to writing on the PC or texting on the cell, paragraphs. But one kind of new style that came out of this is the one sentence paragraph. Not just here and there, but as a means of writing a text. One sentence paragraphs. You'll see a lot of it now in journalism, and there are reasons for the journalistic uptake of this form. Traditionally, the one sentence paragraph had two effects. One, it was used as a transition between larger areas of text. Take a one sentence paragraph and say, well, we just dealt with that, and that brings us to the next point. And then you're into your next 7 or 10 sentence paragraph. So it's one of its features is movement, motion. Second, the one sentence paragraph is used for dramatic effect. And prose written with one sentence paragraphs, one, goes very quickly, and two, has a lot of drama and impact, both of which endure to journalism. It's like both of those things, it's a dramatic form. The order of sentences, here's a couple of interesting things. When you're writing one sentence paragraphs, the order of sentences isn't all that fixed. You can move them around. And the old kind of paragraphs, you can't. They were locked in place by those transitions. Each sentence in the one sentence style is a vignette. Observe this. When you're writing one sentence paragraphs, you've just reached a point at which paragraph and sentence merge. It's a new form. We don't know what it is or what it does. But I tell you this, it's a new form with new properties. The style of language is totally discontinuous, and it's a mosaic. It's very post-literary. It's a field of ideas. That's why you can move them around, change the order. There is, with one sentence paragraphs, the reader is afforded no aesthetic distance. You can't stand back now and develop paragraph. You have the topic sentence, which announces the theme or the object of attention. And then you would develop it in this way or that way, and as you did that, the reader could stand back mentally and observe and criticize. But the one sentence paragraphs, your aesthetic distance is right against your nose. You have no aesthetic distance allowed. The style is not allowed. So it's very pushy, very assertive, and very high in participation. Here's a clue. As participation rises, objectivity diminishes. And when you introduce even a modicum of participation into writing, you now are cutting up the ground from underneath the alphabet. Because the alphabet is the agency by which we developed aesthetic distance, objectivity, and detachment. No other writing system does that. We went into great detail on that in Laws of Media. Anyway, a little more. That's one sentence paragraphs. We also have two sentence and three sentence paragraphs. But these don't allow development either. And that is pretty much the range for writing on a PC. Oh, there's one other. One other brand new form that comes out of this new technology and the instant kind of attention, point form writing, which the academic world has taken up in PowerPoint presentations. But it isn't just the academic world. PowerPoint has invaded business and everything else. But